Welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast, Jay Bird.
Steve, what's happening tonight?
Living the dream, as always.
Outstanding.
Just off the boat. Scratching the slime away, as they say. Actually, be honest with you, they've been pretty dang dialed in there. You know, what are you going to do? You catch a few here, you catch a few there, can't go wrong.
You still having all that super hot weather?
It is something else, to be honest with you. It is absolute craziness of the heat. I've never seen it this warm, and we're what it is really systemic of a lack of rain, you know. And so a little bit warmer than it should be, but all that does is just move seasonality up a little bit, and it's a great reminder. Don't fish the calendar. Fish the conditions, right? And it's just... It's one of these deals, and you've got to make small adjustments where you get this, you got that. You just got to factor everything in. It's funny, been a lot of wind play, you know, because generally when you have a, you know, it's taking, and there's a lot of reservoirs in the south, and a lot of people fish on different bodies of water. And, you know, southern, you think reservoirs, you think some moving water, or at least water passing through, or dam releases. You get a lack of rain, it just becomes one big old lake, and you got to treat it as such, you know. And it's funny where, you know, the second things, if you take away a factor and you have to account for other contributing factors, and it's just kind of an evaluation of, you know, day to day, and trying to not let overarching principles cloud awareness is what I would say. You know, you got to read it right then and there. You just have to. You can't go, well, this is this. Well, now it's no longer a reservoir. The water's not moving, or it's no longer a river. The water, if a river's not been really moving for a while, right? Guess what? Going to fish different. It's going to set up different. It's going to stage different. You know, and I think, Jay, to be honest with you, you and I, you know, talked this week. You finally got some warm weather headed your way, right?
It started yesterday, you know? All week. Till Saturday it's supposed to cool down, right?
You got these
lakes are going to be opening up here soon, you know. Starting to see a little bit of ice deterioration is the best way. You know, really dark ice, like it's you wouldn't want to walk on it, let's put it that way.
You don't want to walk on it, but you know, everybody up there is going to be trying to get a read on what's going on. You know, we're shocking. I ain't crawling in that dumpster, I can tell you, but shocking. You'll be fishing in Wisconsin, or some will be here soon. And then Minnesota's not too far behind. And believe it or not, Canada is within, you could hit a golf ball to it, Jay, almost. It's just a chip away here before everything's open there.
Yeah.
And it's one of these deals you got to look at. The spring is such a time where, one really has to, you can't really calendar base it, you know. I mean, I've been doing really well. Mustang is always just a freaking staple, you know. And then, believe it or not, old Stevie threw some blades, Jay.
You were telling me.
It's embarrassing, but hey,
it's
embarrassing. But no, I mean, it's fishing the condition. They go,
fishing the conditions. The
this
conditions
is it.
Warrant, and they produce.
Right,
hey,
here it is. And then, you know, I mean, staging and all this stuff kind of, you know, boom, checks the boxes. You know,
is that lack of rain thing affected your, especially on the reservoirs, the water level, hence the weed growth? Is there some...
Ish. It just depends. It depends on where you're at, because it's interesting when I don't know if every state or every, you know, you have a lot of stuff would be Corps engineers, or here we have TVA, or, you know, everywhere you have different governing bodies that control those things. But a lot of times, you know, you just end up whatever it is, and it's just a big lake. And then you're going, oh, okay, what's the difference? And, you know, just a note, it's something, heck, Jay, somebody, you know, you probably won't have to deal with it for years, but it's one thing I always keep in mind. You go, when water stops moving, this happens on rivers, Jay. You've had droughts up there where they're just nothing. It's stagnant. It's stationary.
Absolutely.
It becomes a lake. And what drives a lot of forage moving in lakes? Wind, right? Things change. You know, current is an element or a factor that dictates positioning in quite a few things, obviously, right? Well, when you take that force away, things reposition. Things change. You know, fish are going to, you know, change and adapt to their conditions. And as a condition, you know, if current is alleviated, okay, that doesn't mean it, I don't know if from the standpoint of muskies don't have to, or if it is stage or standpoint that forage doesn't have to, that decompresses a body of water, right? And it's something I've been thinking about in my head all the time. You hear proximity, right? Proximity, proximity, proximity. You got to get close enough. But current and conditions are compressors, right? They compress where things are found, right? You look at, okay, we want to go to the north end of a lake in season opener, right? That's old hat. Well, that is a draw, right? The warmth compresses forage, therefore compresses predators. Current compresses forage and therefore compresses predators, attracts predators. And it's just a way I've been thinking about it, trying to keep in my head is looking at factors as compressing factors. How do they compress things? Are they going to, what's the overarching factor that is going to compress forage, therefore compress predators? Now, we're always looking for that. You're looking for, okay, the north end with the warmth, which is the compressing factor. We have a blow, you know, you got wind that's for 3 days and that wind shifts the forage that compresses that factor, right? But you need to look at sometimes when you have that decompression, then it's wide open, right? And you fish, me and you fish, Jay, days like that where it's like wide open, you know. But it's just kind of the take. I'm kind of the tip, kind of the sled I'm riding on right now, Jay. That's kind of where my brain's at. Anyway, what do we got here? Let's look at the comings and the goings at the Muskie Shop. What do we got here?
Yeah, I've got a few new things in today. That
Bill Lewis, big gifts.
Yep.
Don't mispronounce that one, boys.
It's been done before, and it's embarrassing if you do.
It'll be done again when we got the pitch. I took a second there. We got, what is this? The spoon. What is it? What am I looking at? What are you? What are you doing here? Why are you in my bedroom? Leave.
Yeah, in there. Are you talking to that baby possum?
Possum. Oh, you know about that. That's a whole.
I saw a picture.
All right, but rejoin her real
Michael
quick.
And her baby possums.
I'm on the boat. Was that yesterday? God, yeah, it was yesterday. Holy crap, it all blurs together. Yeah, I get my phone's ringing, and if the wife calls on the boat, she knows what I'm doing. You know, I'm out working, so she doesn't. And it's usually pretty dang important.
Okay.
And, you know, she calls, and there's not one, but there are two possums in our garage, Jay.
Oh.
So, what do you do? So, she was at, do you know there are possum rescues? She was able to take them to the possum rescue, believe it.
They'll rescue just about anything these days.
They will, freaking, you know. So, she was a little, she was freaked out at first and then delighted and took pictures with baby possums. So, they had been.
Do you think mama abandoned them? Or what was the story there?
I don't know.
Possumologist?
Why the hell would I know? I have a feeling that Mama Possum. I have a feeling that the my two silly dogs ran off Mama Possum. But I've learned things I didn't care about, but I now know. They're just at the age where they will abandon them. They're weaned age, so who knows?
Okay.
But possum blessings abound at the Paul House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so maybe we will have to have a possum hunt in the near future. And but, you know, it's called manifesting, Jay. Try it. Manifest. I manifested possums, apparently.
Okay.
Been talking about them enough. Anyway, what is going on with this thing. Is this what a lipless crankbait? What is the Bill Lewis Big Giz?
Yeah, well, I took the description from their website, and they call it a spoon-like. I can't see that personally.
Well, a fork it's very is spoon-like tube.
This thing has three line ties on the vertical up by like the dorsal fin. So, and it's a very thin bait with a like a fish-like synthetic hair tail.
Like a brush tail, yeah.
Brush tail. So, tail. It's definitely got jigging attributes of the...
slightly jiggy.
Yeah, you can get jiggy with it, Steve. It's, you really can.
Okay, from the website.
But you can get cranky with it, too.
Mounted on rotating hook hangers to keep a ticked-off lunker securely pinned all the way to the back of the boat. Okay. Customizable action. What is the action? What do you do with this? Somebody figure. Blade bait, lippers crank. Okay, I mean, you're going to have... Looks cool. If somebody try it out, let us know.
I'm going to try it out soon.
There you go. Oh, you're going to shoot the short. Baby. Shooting your shot, shooting your shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do other thing with your shorts. What do we got here? Did you get the... not yet. So you got Banshees. Jay has... I think we talked about that last week. There'll be a little bit, the last one for quite some time on other Banshee colors there. What we got left? You got Sexiest Shad.
Yep, there's only a few of those left.
Yep, got that. So,
hey, we got a new... did you see that Josh Spreader?
No, credit where credit's due.
How about that's different?
Do you know who's placed that? Do you know who placed that order at the Pittman Creek show? That'd be me. Do you not remember that? That was like the freaking fall show, and I called you and I said to be there.
You know, we got him through a GSM direct order, actually.
Well, frickin',
yeah. We ordered him weeks ago.
When? Did you not have these before? Because I put them in with Pittman Creek at the fall. Those are the same ones. So,
well, we got them direct. So, anyway, yeah. I mean, what do you think of them?
I use on my boat. That's why I said that.
Yeah, I think they look pretty cool. Tom and I saw them, we're like, hey, check this out. I like the, the features of it are going to create less tearing of the mouth, less damage. So,
I want to know where the other ones are. I thought we'd had these in for a hot minute. Nonetheless, okay, yeah, that's what I've had in my boat. I picked those up a couple years ago at a saltwater store. Me and Jody Michael were in Texas, and I saw those, and they obviously stainless, don't rust. I thought we'd had them. Yeah, these are definitely, I mean, they're not something that you use very often, but the thing is this, if you look at the picture, folks, for you dreaming of jaw spreaders at home and can't see them, they've welded supports, and what it is, it really gives a nice amount of surface area if you got a muskie in the net. They're built for saltwater fish, and they're not going to rust. But, yeah, they clasp shut, all that fun stuff. Best $20 of something you won't have to rebuy. I don't know if it's on the package. I haven't dropped mine. I believe the handles float, but they've got, like, the ergonomic grips. Do you know if those are float, Jay?
I would hesitate to say that they float.
I haven't tried it. Yeah, I can't recall if it was marketed to that or not. Nonetheless...
It's just a rubberized handle in the center. Yeah. I don't think it's a flotation device.
I didn't know if they floated, but that's the only jaw spreader I have in the boat. And it's
cool.
Rare that you got to use them. That is the one you need. Freaking hands down. That is the
one. Got some new bass stuff in today, too.
What do you got?
The bass jig from GSM. Yeah. Wow. One of the colors is called Chick Magnet.
Way to keep the show moving. I thought that was funny.
Yeah,
you got a bass jig. No, I'm kidding. That's one thing people don't know. You got a few things here and there.
Ooh, we're always getting bass stuff in. Yeah,
there's actually a decent amount of stuff at the shop for people that are slipping in and slipping out. You know, you got your Rapala, you got your this, you got your that. Some of it matriculates onto the website here and there.
Yeah, there's like 16 pages of bass and walleye stuff.
Is there really that much now?
That section. Yeah, it's huge.
I didn't even realize we'd gotten that deep.
Yeah.
Ban panfish. Is there really that pages? I'm scrolling. There literally is. I thought you were being facetious when you said there is 16 pages of best.
It took a lot of work.
There you go. So, I'm not going to make fun of products here. Sorry. There's just random bad stuff. Some of the bad stuff is the silliest stuff you're ever going to
run
into.
They got some good names. Yeah, they got some good names. Anyway. It all spills down into Muskie eventually.
Let me get here. All right, guys. First up, Stacy. Quick question. In the spring, do Muskies move up like bass? Main lake points first, then secondary points, then shallows to spawn, then reverse back out? Love the show. Keep it up. So, Muskies will move up. So, the point moving, right? Actually, I was working on a thing with Livingston, with Klun on this, right? So, if you don't know, you're about to know. In the words of Klun, Rick Klun, when I was working on this stuff with him the other day, bass like to get on points in the spring to prepare for the spawn, right? Now, I don't know this. I'm regurgitating something the master said there. But it's not every point. It is the point, right? So you will have points adjacent to spawning areas where largies will use this. They'll kind of retreat in. They'll retreat out, right? And there's an ebb and flow or a flux of this point usage pre-spawn, right? Muskies are definitely going to use points, but they're not going to use it as far as the reversal, right? Where they'll go in and spawn and then revert to a point. Muskies in general are going to find their spawning area. How do we find the spawning areas or determine what zones those are? Generally, the rule of thumb, north end of lakes, they receive the most sun in the spring, right? Increased sun activity means warmer water temperature. It means early vegetative growth, right? Muskies use that. They're broadcast spawners, right? So muskies come in, they pair up, they do their thing, yakety schmackety, all is well, all is good, right? What they're going to do post-spawn is generally stay in shallow areas, and they're going to pick off more small baits more often, right? Now, what a lot of people are missing is how often that they suspend after that, right? So you have a couple groups of fish that will, or not a couple groups, but you have different groups. Some fish will remain tucked up shallow on the edge of post-spawn. You have other muskies that will use shallow water, but they're not shallow in relation to the bottom, right? So shallow can be anywhere, you know. The shallow section, you can be over 200 feet of water and fish the shallow water, right, the first couple feet. So a lot of times muskies are going to go out and they will suspend, right, and it happens post-spawn. Now, a lot of feeding will take place where they move back into the shallows and they retreat to suspend. So unlike bass doing the point rotation, the in and out on points, muskies will flux into the shallows and then pull out, right, and then go back in to feed as needed. Again, you will find some fish that will just stay up on those edges and just beat it, but the vast majority of those fish are fluctuating in and out. The same thing that will happen to during cold fronts, you know, it's you'll have some fish that'll tuck way back in, and you'll have other fish will drop out that secondary break. Same thing that plays in the spring there. What else? I'm trying to think on that end. I mean, you can't pattern bass and then try to pattern muskies, but just thought process-wise, you know, understand what those habits are, and you can exploit it a little bit more there.
Yeah.
Dan Slimelander Mill. Dan is a regular.
Yeah, I know Dan. I'm sure I know Dan.
Regular, yeah, regular poster. I'm sure. What is it? July 18th. Or is it?
Yep. Bash is
2026.
Yes. Be July 18th, Saturday. Be there, be square. Yeah, it's going to be epic this year.
Okay, epic. Tell us why. Don't make a blanket statement and don't expand. Tell us why.
Well, it's the Muskie Shop Bash.
That's why.
Yeah, it starts at 11 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
Anyway, we're
gonna have tons of vendors. I mean, yeah, it's going to be very similar to last year in terms of the layout. Got that huge tent again.
The tent of pain.
Rain or shine, it's going to happen, you know.
Listen, knock on wood here. We have yet to have rain. I don't believe we will. I think we always get smiled down upon, Jay, at the bash.
Yep.
Segway on that. It's time to, it is, we'll get to Dan here in a minute. He ain't going anywhere, but yeah, the bash. If you don't know, now you know. It is July 18th, and at the bash, tons of vendors, right? And the cool thing is this, they're there to talk to you. Jay, how's it looking so far? I was actually, of all things, I was sitting with frickin' Daryl, that works with St. Croix, you know, which one of the
sure.
reps. Yeah, I was sitting
there.
As the email came through, I was sitting in West Benning, like, oh, there it is. So I know St. Croix is going to be there. Livingston's going to be there. Who else is confirmed so far? Who you got?
Well,
Smitty's.
Put me on the spot. Yeah, Smitty's, of course.
Wolverine Split Rings.
A lot of the people that were there, I think we had 36 vendors last year. So a lot of those folks have confirmed.
When I was at the Classic, I know the chick with Lakewood. I stood there, she put it on her calendar. So I know Lakewood.
Lakewood
probably showing out and showing up. So it's always good. Yep. We'll have a big old list there. So if you don't know,
everything's on sale. 15% off is what we're planning on. I mean, it's a huge sale. It's the biggest one of the year on top of it. And we also give away a lot of free goods. A lot of people walk out of there with
stuff.
You know, there'll be probably a couple rods given away, probably a couple reels, a couple tackle boxes, and probably well over 100 lures, musky lures. So,
yeah.
You stand a great chance of winning that, you know. Of one of those packets of goodies that we're going to be giving away
towards
the end of the bash. It's a short thing too. It's basically all condensed in 4 hours, so it's not.
That's the greatest thing of it. It's like by the time
we keep things moving,
you keep it moving. We don't need to stand around and you know, you get in, you get out, you have fun. We're there, and you know what, Midwesterners, you could get them to jump off a cliff for a raffle, Jay. I've learned that there's not an event that goes by where you can't have a raffle, right?
Absolutely.
Literally at the trade show the other day, when we have the trade shows and stuff, there's no raffle. They have to have raffles, Jay. Do they have does like church service on Sunday have raffles in the morning?
They do. All of them.
Imagine. Yes. It's the only way to get groups of people together in the upper Midwest. what are they having at Lenny's funeral raffle? Like, do they have raffles graveside anywhere where four or more gather?
Okay, you're crossing the line.
It's in the law there. It's like if you anywhere four or more people gather, there must be a raffle.
There's a Wisconsin will too. In your will, there's a clause. It's section 45, paragraph 8. Indicates that there's just a section where you can include, you know, different things to raffle at the end, because you know everyone's got something they want to give away.
Old shoes, meat raffle. Anyway, Dan says, "Greeting from Slimelander, Steve and Jaybird. I've been hankering for a musky master glass. Could you talk about tips and tactics about open water musky fishing or busky fishing? By the way, I stopped at the shop and seen Jay Bird, DJ Tommy Fresh and Elmer. Gave me an hour of his time to talk on how to make leaders. That's awesome. Thanks for stopping by. Elmer is a good guy to get some good leader making skills out of, wouldn't you say? He's always happy to teach.
Elmer loves telling, sharing his insight, let's say, on building bucktails, putting leaders together and stuff like that. He loves helping out.
That's if you're ever in there, Elmer, you know, as long as he's not like super busy, if you come in a slick, grab him. Hey, I need to know. And that's what, you know what, I'll say this, and it's not a schlub on the shop or anything like that. But if you're, I mean, if it's slammed, let me explain something real quick, Jay. Jay can attest. If it's a Saturday and it's raining, don't try to grab somebody to learn something, right? Like, you know, it's, if you notice, like, when it's packed, right? Obviously, they'll make time, but if you're in and it's, like, not super busy or something like that, that's a great time to grab one of these guys, because pretty much everybody at the shop can help you on some front, you know what I'm saying? Whether, like you said, Elmer building bucktails, or, hey, you got this or you got that. I know it sounds corny, like, oh, ask somebody and they'll help you. Absolutely, but, you know, they might not be able to help you make bucktails if it's a rainy Saturday in July and the place is packed. Come back on Monday when it's a little slower, you know what I'm saying? But you do that all the time, Jay, where you'll just cut off with somebody and talk this, talk that, and cover this, you know. So feel free. Anyway, I don't know if we're going to just launch into Open Water Master Class, but it is timely. We're just talking about suspension. So, open water. Let's get, Jay, do you want to just get it out of the way real quick?
Sure.
Get the thing out of the way. Scope.
Certainly try.
Right? Oh, live scope. Clutch your pearls. It exists. So I'll mention it while talking about this. First and foremost, post-spawn muskies have a tendency to suspend in adjacent open water post-spawn in that early spring period. So what are we doing and how are we breaking it down? For years, I've capitalized on this way before live scope was even a thing. Didn't exist, right? So, open water is interesting from the standpoint, obviously, we don't have a target to throw at. And when I say open water, I don't mean one cast off the bank. I mean over a basin, right? Quite often, you will find these fish that are just suspended in the upper part of the water column in a basin, and I don't want to say featureless, but there's a few things to look for. So the most important thing is where. Where would they be? So we have a big open basin. Where would we find fish? Well, things that can stack them up. Wind, right? We're talking about things that will condense or compress. So wind is important to look at. Now, not often, is it windy all the time? No. So at times you'll find them where they're laying in basically direct sunlight in open basins. You will find places in open basins where throughout the day fish ebb and flow, right? And they will move around basins, and the bait fish will move around in open basins based on where the sun's hitting in warm spots, hot spots. You know, I'm not going to say, you know, every piece of electronics is good enough to find it, but I've found slight temperature differentials, Jay, before in open basins where, you know, you go 100 yards this way and it's, oh, okay, that's incrementally warmer, right? So,
which is something you're looking for in the spring.
Right, exactly.
In that early season.
Right, yeah. And that can be found in the upper part of the water column in open basin. So, you know, you look at open water muskies. I'm thinking this time, that basin. Now, what's our plan of attack? What are we doing? How are we locating them? Now, where scope gets a lot of rap is these guys that will drive around and they put their motor on four, you know, not their motor. They'll go 4 miles an hour. They got their scope pointing out the side. They see a blob. They stop. They circle back and pitch at it, right? That's that. Not something I'm doing right now at all. I'm not saying I'm against it. Not saying I'm for it. I'm just not the headspace. Now, what I've done in years past, before scope was even a thing, what I'm going to do is try to narrow that basin down and work it in a grid-like fashion. You've got to take open water and you've got to break it into chunks where you're efficiently covering things, because shoreline edges and structural edges and cover edges give you a game plan. You can you can make a derivative boat pass along them and feel like you've covered it. Open water, you can't just sit there and make a cast over there and a cast over here and a cast over there and a cast over there and think that you're covering it, right? Proximity still plays. You've got to land it whatever the hit box is for a muskie that day. It is going to ebb and flow. You still need to get close enough for them to perceive the bait, right? So the best thing I can tell you in open water is break it down in a grid-like fashion. This is when having one extra guy in the boat, if not two, you got two guys in the boat, okay, three's even better, and you're chopping it up, right? And then you turn, and you're going to do it in a grid, right? So I'm going to go for any context clues I have. So first and foremost, looking for, is there wind play? Is there a temperature difference? Like, you come, it's not uncommon, you come out of a main basin into like a, or say like a bay, right? You can come out of a main basin into a bay and find a temperature differential somewhere in that bay, right? So look for that. Looking at the play on the wind, obviously forage, right? This is where your side scan and your down scan come into play. So if we're just going to straight old school, break it up into a grid, cover it, and make sure that you're trying to land your cast 5 feet apart, whack, 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 then work it in a grid, and you'll be able to kind of break it down. Presentation-wise, it's going to be not dissimilar from what you use in the shallows. Now, I think it's one thing when it's early season open basin, you think, or open water, people for some reason always gravitate towards bigger presentations. I don't know why, but they just, when I've seen it, because you see a lot of open water fishing and people are thinking, you know, mag dogs, or they're thinking this or the other. I've been very successful, small blades, rattle traps, cranes, slammers, you know, smaller baits in open water early season. Now, later in the year, we're going to upsize just the same, but so I'm not going to make some big, tremendous jump in size class, right? I'm not going to just, okay, because we're open water. So you still need to think size, you know, it's your size of your presentation is going to be seasonally based. And then that fashion, you come in, let's up it one more time, you know, side scan, you can actually scan an open area and triangulate. And this is what everyone did before live scope, right? You're driving around. Oh, there's the grain of rice on the side scan, right? They target that, or they target, there's a bait, school of bait, right? And then obviously people get a live scope and they're trolling around looking. I don't care about how you find them. Triggering strikes and getting those eats to me is more so about the same thing plays in open waters, timing more so than anything, right? When are the bite windows going to happen? The bite window in open waters generally not dissimilar from the bite window in a shallow zone, right? So am I looking at, you know, sunrise, sunset? Am I looking at majors, minors? Or am I looking at climactic things, right? To me, the one time that I ever focus, and something people ask me in the boat all the time, about shade lines, right? When shade lines happen in open water, that's when I'm paying attention. So if you want a real little secret there. So,
well, yeah. I mean, I agree about shade lines. I've always thought that was a big factor to try to key in on, you know.
It, to me,
but you're always thinking shorelines when you're thinking shade lines. But yes, go ahead.
To me, it's really not. I mean, and it depends on where you're at, because like here, if I got hills, or I got this, or I got that, I can get those at different times in open water. So topography plays. There's different timing that I'll come in and like, okay, I'm going to hit this shoreline at this time because I know, you know, it's going to be shaded. There's a light change there where we might be able to get a fish up higher. But that open water bite, I've done exceptionally well on paying attention to sun angle, light angle, right? And at times what I'm going to do is, if I think, let's say that we're post-frontal early season, right? We got a little bit of a temp drop. I know that a portion of the muskies have pushed out of their shallow haunts. And let me back this up. When do we go open water, and when do we go open water early season? Let's frame it that way. If we have a temperature drop that is measurable in the first 3 feet of water, and I mean vertically and horizontally is what I'm looking at, right? Has the water temperature from the day before, or do we believe maybe we weren't there, but climactic events give you every indication that there will be a drop in temperature. So let's say it's 65 yesterday, and today our high is going to be 59, right? That might indicate that there's going to be, depending on water clarity and color, but I would guess, okay, that is enough for dramatic change in overall temperature and a slower warm up the open water might be applicable, right? That's when I'm going to focus there. Slight change, the bite's going to change. And what I'm thinking of when I'm thinking open water in the early season is instead of sliding into feed, because what I the way I'm looking at a lot of these fish or a lot of muskies in the early season, just like structural rules of everything else, we're going to use shallow areas, right? Shallow is a relative term, but we're going to use shallow structure and cover as a means to shorten the predation curve, right? They're going to truncate spatially so they're more effective and then come back out and recoup. I mentioned vertically, the verticality of it is that you might have warm water that's more of a recouping, warming water opposed to shallow feeding zone, right? That's what I was saying earlier. Some fish come in, they linger in the shallows the entire time post-spawn. Some fish actually ebb and flow in and out, but they're staying in the shallow section of the water column vertically, right? More fish are going to stay out of those shallows if you have any meaningful temperature drop on the shallow edge, that first 3 feet, shoreline, vertical, or horizontal, right? And so that's when I start focusing on that. And really, realistically, is adjacent to spawning areas, right? And once you kind of get a finger on the pulse of when the spawn was, that area expands dramatically. So from a casting standpoint, grid-like fashion, overlooked entirely, people pay no attention to, is early season trolling. None. People pay very little attention to it, Jay. Where you look at something like the power lock did with Duff, right? That vertical planer board, sticking a rattle trap behind that and getting it down only like 5 feet and trolling it, dynamite. Bookertail 500, 700, small blades, giant killers, all that stuff. That's the thought process of, well, casting over open water is generally inefficient. It's, you know, if you got one guy and casting open water, you're better off to drag a bait. And especially like a Wisconsin scenario where it's like a one for one, you got one rod, one guy. If I'm looking at that open water, I'm strapping up, you know, either blades or one small crank, and I'm just hand holding, dragging around, right? Cover it. You're just way more efficient, way more effective, right? And you can grid out open water really fast. But back to the point of the timing. So we looked at the why. When are we going to focus on this? The timing factors for me are often in open water. If there's a light change, we're talking about shade lines, but man, if you get, and again, I'm not saying like, I don't want to say like clouds that blot out the sun, like the low hanging, it's about to rain musky clouds, but sometimes it's just enough that it clouds up, Jay. Light change, boom, that bite can open up in open water. So throughout the course of the day, I'm looking at shallows, right? Try to find those fish, and I'm being observant and paying attention for any climactic change, whether that be a wind shift, whether that be a lighting change, right? Or when we get the sun angle low enough, right, where that light change is there. So that open water scenario, there's less glare, there's less refraction for those fish are than that top part of the water column. And the reason that light is so important, they don't have, if they're, let's say that muskies are staged, and it's not uncommon in the early season for a muskie during that part of the year, this early part of the year, to be no deeper than, say, 5, right? That's a lot of light penetration. Also, too, it's not a lot of room to look up. So you got shallow running baits, but we take a look at the way they predate forward and up. They don't have a big world view, right? So you got to realize, you know, we need to stimulate their lateral line. We know that, but also, too, visual cues are not helping you. So if he can't see that far forward, he can't, you know, forward and up is not that far, and width is truncated because of how high they were in the water column. It's a matter of horseshoes. We got to get close to them, right? And you don't have a lot of room to deviate, so they don't have a lot of room to come up. So I always try to target those open water fish in lower light periods or during lower light events. And that lower light event might just be enough clouds to roll in to dim it up a little bit. That's when I'm going to transition from that back out of the shallows, come out. Let's hit that real quick, see if we can hook up. That's kind of the thought process there. What do you think? I don't want to go full rabbit hole on this. We got others to hit, Jay. What's the anything else? What am I missing? What are we doing? What day is it?
Monday.
I'm trying to think. I don't want to shortchain you, but there's a lot there. And that's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, I rely on your electronics and whatever degree of electronics you want to use. You know, that it shortens the curve. Nothing else. I mean, if nothing else, locating suspended bait in the early season, you'll find like tightly grouped bait quite often early. You know, and now again, conditions, the day to day can change how tightly grouped bait is or how condensed it is. But, you know, finding that will at least allow you to narrow on your area. So if you find the bait fish, whether the bait fish are there and active, there's something going on that's saying this little area of an open basin is where things want to be.
Yeah, bait fish high in the water column. If you get big packs and schools of them, yeah.
Right.
That's a no-brainer. That would be factor probably number one for me to start looking and
right, and cast around that. You can kind of bang around, you know, you find that, that's a starting point. Like I said, water temp, all kinds of stuff. You can go down the rabbit hole. Peter is the Strait of Hormuz a good example of a neck down or more of a main lake point? I think I know who sent this. Well, the Strait of Hormuz is more of a neck down than a main lake point.
In a grand
point.
Scale, yeah.
Yeah, it depends. It's definitely a point where things are getting pinched and compressed. I can promise you that. Speaking of, I don't like to get too real world on here. But $4, Jay. $4 a gallon. That's exciting. Speaking of, not a lot of trolling this week. I wasn't too excited about that. You know, right, no, boys, you can row them. No. Slid that one in me. Slid it right by. Hunter, can you explain first break line and second break line? I know what they are, but can't seem to grasp if the first break line is a break from the deep basin towards the shore or if the first. Okay, so here we go. Structurally, when we're going and we're trying to say first break, second break, all this stuff, going from the shoreline out. Right. That's the way that when writing, when conveying, that's the way everybody's kind of looking at this is if you're standing on the shoreline, that first break would be the first transition. And then the second one. So it is from shoreline to main basin or open water, if you will. Right. So in how you're counting that or how they're enumerated, if you will. Right. So the first break out of the shallows. The second break is obviously past the first break. There can be thirds. There can be a million breaks all the way down. There are substantial depth changes. So that is from shoreline out. When you're conceptualizing that, Sean, Steve, love the pod. I know you're a spinner bait master of disaster. Can you give us some pointers on when to swap blades and why we should swap blades? How much of a swap should it be? Okay, I got what you're asking here. It goes on, Jay. Goes on. He's asking more. Swapping blades, spinner
getting
baits.
Technical with it.
Getting technical. I ain't going to lie. Part of my plan of attack, early season, meat grinder. You know it. Love it. I live and die by that sort. So that is actually a mag size blade on there. I am throwing right now standard size blades on a full size frame spinner bait. So, cool thing about spinnerbaits, you can take one spinnerbait, take a Steve's meat grinder, and you can augment the blade size up and down. So, you know, you go from, I don't know what's the smallest musky size, Jay? Like a 4? I don't know if you know off the top of your head.
You talking about willow blades?
Yeah, like a willow blade size-wise.
4 is real small. I'd say 5 is commonly small. Yeah, that's a number 8. On Steve's meat grinder.
Yeah, that's as big as you want to flop most of the time. Mm-hmm. But
sevens are more common.
Sevens your standard, wouldn't you say? And then
standard large willow blade paracetamol.
Right, and so five to eight I'm trying to get the range of what the common blade sizes are without
yep, 5 to 8. Sure.
5 to 8 if you're looking. So, you know, you look at like the downsize or the small, like the mini boss from figure eight or even the small ace bait, that's a 5, and you're working your way up. Mm-hmm. Keeping these on hand. Sometimes the profile will matter, right? We all know that the overall size of the presentation can play. You know, you look at the frame size, and what I mean by frame size for the uninitiated is the overall dimensions of a spinnerbait, but you also have skirting size and the lead head. What I love to do in the early season is a full-size spinnerbait with a small blade. It's ridiculously good. It's underutilized. I actually got a box from Dawn at Figure 8 this week, Jay. They're just full-size frames with small blades. You get the depth, you can get the speed you need, right? And you're not throwing a small, and there's nothing wrong with the small bass size or the mini size, but it's the effectiveness is there. So what I like to do if I'm dealing with weedy cover, going mm-hmm. from that, really I'm jumping from, like you said, the 5, which is the small, and then Jay said like the 7's kind of what you would say your standard. You can go up to the mag, but really jump around between that 5 and that 7 on the willow front, right? Obviously, your blades are going to change your lift. Dependent on your fishery, I feel like having an Indiana blade handy on a spinnerbait is pretty dang effective, right? Because you look at, let's say, some of these classic things. There's been scuds of early season muskies, Jay, caught on Booker 700s and 500s, right? Single yep, Indiana, small. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Throw one of those on a spinnerbait, you got it. Doesn't have to be inline to do the same thing. I like spinnerbaits during this early part of the year or when you get those opener periods for coping with that shallow stuff. I mean, it's just something you run into. You go up in the shallows and you're banging through there. And I mean, at times it's early season can often be nondescript as far as like your targets. You know, you get up on the early stuff. There's not a lot of vegetation. You're banging the shoreline. I always feel, you know, every cast always counts in muskie fishing, but that time of year, like getting up there and trying to kick start a 500 size blade and it just won't start and you wasted a cast, right? There's a lot of value in modding your spinner baits to do that and going, hey, I'm going to run the Indiana on there. So I know every time this thing's just going.
You can just, it's just that simple. It's just that quick to clip on. You're not rebuilding a bait.
No, you're using
the clip on there. You take off a willow, you put on a Colorado blade, you put on a fluted blade, something like that, right? You got more pump. It's like, and sometimes that might be all it takes, you know? It's like, think of it like a crankbait. Like if you're running like a 6-inch slammer. That's like the one slammer that has a round lip. Well, it doesn't have that hard vibration kind of thump to it that square lip crankbaits like mm-hmm. any other crane or slammer bait would have. So it's just like, you know, sometimes it's not all about the noisiest, loudest thumping, clacking thing in the world. It's got to be more subtle. So that's the cool thing about spinner baits, how interchangeable they are. Quickly adaptable to what you need.
And if the worst case, and I've had guys, if you look at like, and I'm just using it for example, and you can use any spinner bait you want. I don't care. Spinner baits, you know, there's different construction, all this stuff. So it's not like you got to go buy a figure eight Steve's meat grinder. Any spinner bait you have, you can play with the blades. If you're like new to musky fishing or heck, Jay, trying to get dialed in, I'm just going to say something, unpopular opinion. Most people spend most of their time not dialed in, right? Rely on spinnerbaits for that. I can tell you right now of so many decisions that I've made based off spinnerbait feedback where taking one, and it's not even a meat grinder at that point. I just take one of the figure eight baits. And the reason I'll tell you flat out, the reason I gravitated towards those is the figure eight. And I love Don that makes those, but the figure eight lure company, their spinner baits, before I knew Don and we were doing the custom stuff, they just have a fast change snap there, which makes it easier for him to make them. That's it. There you go. Right. You got it. So you're able to augment these things where you can, if you got your stuff rigged up already, you can so quickly go through willow leaf blades. You can go through a single eight. You can throw on double eights. And all it takes to have this whole library of options is a pocket full of blades and swivels, right? Maybe a pair of split ring pliers. And you can just go through it and you go, are they on double blades? Is it more of a thump, less of a thump? Is a single lope going to do it? Opposed to getting out, oh, I don't have double, I don't have a stagger. You can make stagger spinnerbaits real quick, not hard, right? Three-way swivel and done. And you can play with this. Maybe you're just looking for that follow, or you're looking for what's going to trigger a reaction or get engagement. If I'm thinking it's time for blades, I'm thinking about a spinnerbait to kind of start that, opposed to going that guesstimation of, okay, are they on X, Y, and Z? What is the blade combination, or what is the, I don't want to say the combination, but what is the vibrational pulse that's going to get the engagement I'm looking for, right? And you get into even augmenting, the Cyclone, Jay? What's the big, it's like the Junior from Mayhem. It's like the, Hurricane. It's not the biggest, it's the Cyclone, but it's not the biggest one. It's Hurricane, excuse me, perfect, that's what I'm looking for, the Hurricane. I have a couple of those where, you know, I've modeled them out. I'm not a big spinnerbait with trebles fan. So I've modeled them out, right? Take off all the extra crap, and I'll actually use those to dial in on big blades, right? So you got a bigger platform for doing that, or one could do it. The Spanky baits, I think they have a smaller, there's the Whiplash, but those are pretty big. But like, as far as castable, a lot of times when I'm dialing in on blades, I'm starting with a spinnerbait and then taking it to inline, right? Because realistically, if you look at it, it really doesn't matter. What's the difference to the fish? The target that it's going to hit is now 2 inches lower than the blades versus in line with the blades. Huh? Lay them next to each. What does it matter? You know what I'm saying? It really doesn't matter to a muskie. He's coming up behind the thing. He's going to hit it. It is what it is. And another tip from this, do you know how if you can find out real quick if they're hitting blades or not, Jay, because you hook them under the chin with spinner baits. And that's one thing, it just popped in my head of like a quick fix. I was talking to a guy on the boat this week. You know how sometimes muskie will come and smack blades and you miss them or whatever like that? You get those bites sometimes, the blade hitters. And if I run into that consistently, I switch to spinner baits immediately with whatever the blade combo I was running. Like, let's say I'm getting blade hitters on double eights.
Mm-hmm.
No secret. I like the MEPS double eights. I will quickly grab out it for the bigger blades. Like I said, that Junior Hurricane, whip that out, throw double eights on it. Frickin' you'll have them under the chin. Right up under, dead center under the chin. And they're coming at you think they've hit the bait, but they're actually blade hitting. And you can switch that and pick up fish that way. But, you know, that's the thing is just get a handful of this stuff. I mean, I would even say this when you're getting into this season, or whether you've done it or not, you know, the quickest way to dial in, because, you know, what everybody loves about bucktails is your ability to cover water. You can cover water quickly, but you can't cover water vertically very well with bucktails. So, you know, you're going to get more bang for your buck on the spinnerbait thing. Down the hole, man. Down the rabbit hole there, bad. Sorry, Brandon. My critter got absolutely destroyed, and I couldn't be any happier. So good to hear. But he couldn't be any happier. Got my PB, a 46-incher for now. And happy to see that worked out for you, bud. He said, I was working cool. Like the videos, reeling and stopping. But I've heard you guys talk about adding weights. Should you retrieve it differently if you add different weights? I've done really well with that bait, especially, you know, prototyping and all that stuff. Again, credit where credit's due. There's Savage Gear weights. Jay, just the clip-on weights. they're shaped. They got this kind of curved thing that happens to just line up on the nose of that critter perfectly. Unintentionally, but I'll take it. Didn't have to make them myself. So they're, Jay, do you recall what the weight's on that? Isn't it like 3/4 or something? What do they have? They got a 1 ounce.
3/8 and 1/2 ounce.
There you go. Those are the ones I like to throw on a critter around them deeper. When I put the extra weights on there, I'm just looking for a faster fall. That's it. So I'm not working it really differently. Because the quicker fall, I might do more lift fall instead of real stop, right? And I'm thinking about whether I'm targeting a deeper edge or I'm targeting different deeper cabbage or deeper weeds. And the only augmentation I'll do is usually switch to a real lift, right, with that, and then let the fall just for a control thing. But, I mean, you can still do your handle turn and stop. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We were just talking about blades. That's the other thing on critter. You know, a couple people have realized already, and we mentioned it before, you can mod that out. And I actually got a fish in the boat this week by just modding that thing out with a single 5 on it. Right. So there, you know, it's just some heat shrink and a swivel, folks. Have fun with it.
A single 5. What are you talking about?
On the back of critter.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. That's the whole thing. It's like modding those out, and you know, that's just for dropping it. You know, it's not just somewhere. I mean, we're just talking about spinnerbait, so it's not. It depends on how you want to skin that cat per se, but not dissimilar that, you know, you can change your lift, your fall, your action on a critter because of the rear blades any way you want, right? And same rules apply, which is single willow leaf blade. Now you can't go really, we have the Critter Max in the works, so that more on that soon, which is the bigger big boy version for everybody. But on the standard size critter, man, I have a bunch of them just modded up with different blades on the back, but the same thing, you just take the heat shrink off and you do whatever you want with it, right? Single willow leaf blade and just freaking let it fall. You can take it down to one blade and it'll speed up its rate of fall. Right. And so when I have used it as a vertical jig, I actually will take one of the blades off. And it just, it's just a 3-way swivel. It's not Fort Knox back there. Right. And just swap stuff out. But like, I like vertically jigging it with just one single blade. And that's the trick right now that is just lost on so many people of, you got your suspendos we talked about, but you still have bottom tight fish, and the worse the condition in the spring, obviously the more bottom tight they're going to get. And you take something like that and just kind of bounce it over the bottom like a little tube and take it out to that first break or that second break, yakety schmackety fish in the net, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just blades, Jay. What are you going to do? You can change them all day. Lawrence says, oh, he sent a video. Okay, somebody setting the hook overseas. Thanks, Lawrence. He's a long-time listener. Appreciate that. Mike on the Manny Chain. Everyone on the Manny Chain is throwing blades, and the scopers are using swim baits. What would be an option to stand out and beat that kind of fishing pressure on the chain?
Is Jay? That Mike's real name?
Mike on the Manny Chain. Yeah, it's a heck of a last name. Mike on the Manny Chain.
I know.
I'm thinking that's just a sign off.
Could be his handle.
It's his CB handle. Mike on the Manny Chain over. What would your CB handle be, Jay?
Oh, CB, like CD radio?
Yeah.
Oof.
Mine would be Beaver 2.
Beaver 2.
That's Beaver 2.
Beaver 2, Brakeman Beaver 2.
I see you coming down that hill.
Come back there and smoke you on her tail.
You hear me, trucker? Slow her down. Beaver 2 out. I don't know.
Yeah.
What would your CB handle, BJ? Now, quick. First response is the best response. What do you got?
I don't know.
Steve. Baits on the Manny Chain. So we got.
Yeah. So he's saying everybody's throwing blades and the scopers are throwing swim baits, I believe is the way he put it. What would you do to stand out from the crowd?
Blades to the left of me, scopers
Manny
to the
Chain.
Right.
Yeah.
Here
Manny
I am,
Chain is a northern Wisconsin, northern Vilas County, diverse chain of lakes. Yeah. Very, very cool water. Yes. Great muskies in there. Gets a lot of boat traffic in the summer.
Mm hmm.
things to consider.
I'm thinking on that. Jay's been there,
Yeah. Have you ever fished out there? I don't believe you have.
I had one time for eons.
You did.
Eons ago.
So you've seen a little bit of it.
Bit of it. And it's just one of those deals. Like you said, it's the diversity. Herbie's out there. I mean, a lot of people hit that. I mean, you've got complexity. You got a bit of this. You got a bit of that. You got a little bit of everything. Things that when I think about that, which is the perennial, you know, you got your blades in your top water banging the bank. You got the scopers, Jay, out there with swim baits. Nothing wrong with it. Whatever. How do we beat that? Things that are going to stand out is going to be deeper running presentations. Immediately, I'm thinking tubes and Krakens, right?
Yeah, deeper running presentations, with a lot of stop-and-go action, you know, especially since they're beating the top of the water column with blades zinging over everything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a lot of the fish out there do suspend. There are a lot. That's a great area for some suspended fish and just deeper break line fish. So, some of the chain is real clear water, too.
And we were just talking where it's one of those things. You got to realize that it's just there's no hard rules in muskie fishing except for there are no hard rules. Not all the muskies are doing the same thing, right? I gaslight myself sometimes and go, they're all back here. They're all doing this. Everyone thinks that way, right? The reality is not all of the fish are doing this, right? They're not. There are fish that are shallow. There are fish that are mid. There are fish that they're all. Now, a lot of times we have similar activity levels of fish that are in areas. But, you know, that kind of pressure, and I hesitant to just say this is the carte blanche answer because there is pressure there. That's known water. People come and fish that specifically. The people guide it, yada, 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 yada. But I think, like we're saying, the tube routine, the Kraken routine, targeting outside edges, right? Which is the stop gap in between open water fishing, right? If people are open water fishing with swim baits and then everyone else is bank beaten with blades in top water, those first break fish, those outside weed edge fish. And even to when I say outside weed edge, just the ever beginnings of weeds, right? You might think you're hitting the outside edge, but hit the outside of that outside edge, right? Get into just where the weeds are barely starting, transitional zones, right? And those are some of the most overlooked areas in muskie fishing. You're lacking a visual target, right? You're relying on your electronics to understand your positioning. So we don't have something to throw that we can see. We have to have competent boat control to be able to hit something we don't see. And we have to have the faith that we're doing it right. Most people can't do that. So a lot of them are going to beat the bank, and the other ones are going to go out there and look on scope. Right? Both of which are I got to see it to believe it. I'm not banging on scope. I don't care. But conceptually, both of those are I need something to throw at.
You're true. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
And that's why I took a moment trying to contemplate this. And I'm going, that differentiator is first break, secondary breaks, outside edges is conceptualization. And most people are bad at that. Right? So you're going to have the least amount of pressure where you have to have competent boat control and conceptualize your target. Because that's the one thing with scope, good, bad, ugly, don't care. I'm agnostic on the subject. You know, I know how I use it for seeing follows and holding the edge. And there we go. Don't care. That's what I do it for. But it doesn't help most people. Like I said, they want something to throw at. So going to that conceptual edge is where your least amount of pressure is generally going to be. And there are fish.
Find the structural points that you know, span out into deep water and target those. It's not going to be a visual cue. Your electronics, your mapping is going to tell you where that is, but it's just like, you're going to be contacting quality fish by doing that.
Yeah. You're going to have
less harassed fish too.
Right. And exactly. From both ends of the spectrum. stuck in the middle with you.
Mm-hmm.
Bucktails to the left of me, scopers to the right. Here I am. What? Steelers will, folks. I don't know. Again, it is what it is. It's pressure from all directions at sometimes on really popular waters. And, you know, I mean, I think no matter what you're going to have, I don't give a if it's pressure or not. It's no matter what you do or how you skin the proverbial cat, that's if you're looking for possibly less action but better quality of fish, that's always where you need to be looking. You know what I'm saying? Just that, whether it's that next cast towards the open water, you know, without going through the whole rigmarole of why. You know, because it's structural preference, but your bigger fish are going to have less incentive to go shallow all the time, right? And it's just simply, it's the shallows, whether it be fishing pressure, whether it be water temperature, whether it be the forage that they're after, there's very, very tiny windows that are incentivized for trophy class, and I'm talking real trophy class fish, to be in the shallow zone, right? So if the goal is quality over quantity, those outside edges, and I don't mean the outside edge of the shallow weed bed, I mean the outside edge of deep stuff or the outside edge of mid stuff, that middle zone is the least capitalized on. You know, we talk about, you know, whether it's fishing in Canada where you go from people are only comfortable throwing to the top of the reef till you got to sell them to get comfortable throwing to the outside edge of the reef to you are pulling teeth to throw to the contact point where structure and main basin are indistinguishable, right? But every major stop along the way, there's actually, and I want to say, let me think. I do not recall, Jay, catching a 36 or fished under 40 something good on main basin stuff structure, right? Where, like you said, a point, and where a main lake point comes out and it truly is the contact point where structure and main basin meet. That is not where you pick up 38s. You know what I'm saying? That's not,
I know what you're saying.
That's not where you pick up old Lenny the 27. That is where you pick up 46s, 4-footers, and 52s.
Bucktails to the left of me, scopers to the right. Here I am, stuck on structure with you.
Stuck on, man, should have done that one. But just think out of the box. Ah! Are you ready, Jay? How ready are you?
Born ready. I'm not sure for what, though.
The doors of the muskie shop to be swinging back and forth. And
oh, man.
You got to be.
Yeah, you just wait, man. We're talking 60s all week.
Wow.
45 at night? You kidding me?
That's
snow's cool. Almost gone.
Snow's almost gone.
Yeah, it's almost gone.
You can put the pistol away for one more year.
Oh. Ice is melting.
Stares at him daily. Anyway, well, good stuff, Jay Bird. We'll get her on her next week there. Say good night.
Okay, Stevie.
All right, there later.
Bye-bye.
One that will get bit. One that won't get stuck in weeds. Will make my wife throw up. One that will plug. One that will make it good. So I can cast all day long. One that makes much misunderstood. One that won't cost a fortune. Wondering what to buy. One that makes me feel.